on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to Canal and Bell on this Friday. I've got Raja working next to me trying to find me a pair of Jordan 11 cool gray golf shoes that Nike is releasing on the sneakers app, as we sometimes get distracted because somebody's got to win the shoe showdown. Could have an epic one upcoming this Wednesday. We got a big show we got to get to. There's news out of the Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph incident that unfolded. I want to make sure we hit on that. The NBA will get Raja's thoughts. I can't wait to hear Raja's thoughts on Luka because you were out yesterday.
Yeah.
Curious to see what you think about what he's doing across the league this year. And Kawhi, man, we talk about best player in the world, but is he too fragile to be in that conversation? We'll go there too. And Eric Weddle of the Rams, he's taking a very self-righteous stance, and I don't know if I love it or not. That and more. We got a bunch to get to. But first, before we cap last night's game real quick.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Teslas, like electric cars, Teslas?
Yeah,
Elon Musk.
I like them.
Regardless of whether you like them or not, they've been pretty polarizing. Elon Musk is trying to change the game as the head of Tesla.
Okay.
So yesterday they announced they are coming out with a pickup truck. Okay. I'm a fan of Tesla. I have one, so I'm partial to them.
Right.
But I was kind of interested. I'm like, let me see this pickup truck is about, because they're still a younger company. They're still coming out with new models. So they come out with this pickup truck and they have this big unveil. It's kind of like Apple with Steve Jobs used to do when they had the new iPhone. You'd put it out there and everybody's like marveling. People are clapping. So he has this big, massive production unveiling this pickup truck that nobody's ever seen.
Right.
And it's futuristic. It looks like a Mars rover vehicle.
I saw that. With the shatterproof glass and stuff.
Well, yeah. So it is supposed to be like bulletproof, shatterproof glass.
They throw something at it.
Well, at the big thing that they're debuting, like, this is probably one of the worst unveils of maybe you've seen in history, right? Because he's like, hey, let's get up our assistant up here. And hey, why don't you throw that rock, which is a massive rock, show everybody how shatterproof it was. And he doesn't even like wind
up.
He just kind of throws it at it and the window shatters and Elon Musk goes, oh, bleep. That. And you can tell it's just one of those moments. And then the worst part about it, he goes, well, let's try the back window. Same thing, both windows. So for the rest of the presentation, he's standing up there talking about the truck and it has two shattered windows.
Phenomenal.
Like, it could not have gone much
worse. Are you a truck guy?
I actually wanted to look into the pick. It's kind of funky.
It is.
It's super funky. And most importantly for me, and like, we're tall people, it looks small. Like, I need some room. Although the Tesla I drive now is really small in the interior. It might be bigger than that. But I don't know. It was different than I would have expected. I thought it was going to be a little bit bigger. But when you want mileage out of a battery, I think it helps to have something that's smaller and a little bit more,
like nimble.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool looking. It's out there. You definitely would get noticed on the road. Be like, what is that?
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens when it comes
out. I couldn't get your shoes, but I'm a little distracted right now. Forgive me.
I couldn't find
the golf shoes on here.
That's weird.
Yeah, they're not on my feed. So.
Oh, that's weird.
Like, maybe where I'm at with this right now? Like, we're just going to do us today.
Yeah,
Damn, I didn't even get those Jordans, the face tasms. But there are no golf shoes on my feed, so I couldn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my bad.
Got to get into that. We got to figure that one out. I'll be online, maybe on StockX or somewhere else, trying to get them after the market. Although I'm not playing any golf. So I don't know why I need another pair of golf shoes
other than
to bring them in for this showdown.
You just have to buy just because, right?
Exactly. All right. Last night we had the Texans edge out the Colts.
You don't care, do you? Do you care? I don't care. Do you care?
No, it wasn't the greatest game. Texans won. Deshaun Watson still was pretty good. Jacoby Brissett played all right. But they've lost 3 of 4. The Colts have.
I did see that.
I am more interested because I'm generally more interested to hear your take on this one. Because Miles Garrett, in his appeal with Roger Goodell, went before the league office, and he's making his case that he wanted to, you know, get this time reduced. So everybody's asking, why did this happen? He really hadn't given an explanation for it. So it comes out, ESPN, Adam Schefter and Jacina Anderson report that Miles Garrett accused Mason Rudolph of using a racial slur in the moments before his outburst where he took the helmet and slammed, bopped him over the head. Of course, we all know about that. What was your initial reaction? Because I want to get your take first before I give mine.
My initial reaction was, how does that get out? I mean, how do you go into a hearing like that, an appeal, and have sensitive information like that, like, leaked to the press hours after you've given testimony about what happened? Do you know what I mean? That was my initial reaction. I don't know, Danny. Like, I wasn't there. Like, this is a simple, I mean, look, I guess there are a few things. Either Mason Rudolph said it, right? Or Myles Garrett is lying. Third possibility is maybe something was said by someone out there that either was that, or he construed for that. Do you know what I mean? And then both of them could be correct in that Myles Garrett thought he heard it, and Mason Rudolph is maintaining he didn't say it. Someone else said something, or Mason Rudolph said something that sounded to Myles Garrett like that. Do you know what I mean? But generally speaking, I have no idea. Like, you know, it's tough, dude. Why would you make that up? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's one of those things where, like, I'm not saying that he said it. It left me wondering, like, Myles Garrett, why would you go in there and say that if you didn't think you heard that? Do you know what I mean?
So here's the spec. And this is where I'm really torn on this one, because I absolutely think it could have happened. I don't necessarily believe him. And here's why. It's a week later.
No,
and like, to me, in the moments after the game, and I'm not saying you would have said it at the podium, made this accusation, but you would have said something. Like, he was very apologetic.
I'm with that.
Wrote Mason Rudolph a handwritten letter apologizing to him. Like, I don't know if you do that if he called you the N-word.
Yeah.
And then probably the most convincing reason why I don't believe Myles Garrett is his teammates yesterday were asked about it. Sheldon Richardson, other guys in that locker room. And they said, no, this is the first time we're hearing about it. So for me, this is what I picture.
That's all.
And that one
evidence
for me is probably the most. There's some other ones, like, hey, if a Steelers teammate heard Mason Rudolph saying that, I think they'd be like, go ahead. Now, it's your teammate, I get it, but I'd have a hard time, like, seeing how that would play out.
What I imagine happened, and that was the third probably scenario that I painted there. Like, look, they're not the only two people standing there. You know, like, maybe something was said in the midst of all of that transpiring that I guess at that point you'd still probably tell your teammates, hey man, did you hear what that month? Did you hear what he called me? Like, do you know what I mean? To your point,
right?
You still be like, yo, bro.
You and I both have been in locker rooms right after games when there's a controversial ending or something, maybe a scuffle like this one. This was not just a scuffle. This was a major incident, of course, because it dominated so much of the discussion. But everybody comes back in the locker room, like, after it's all sorted on the sideline, and then everybody comes back in, and it's not that much different than in elementary school or high school when there was a fight. Everybody's talking about the fight when you come back in.
Right.
And there's that 10-minute window before the press comes in. What I would envision people doing is being like, whoa, what just happened? Can you believe this? And people saying, what'd he do?
Look,
like, what did he do to you? And that would, to me, would be the first thing. Would be like, he called me this.
To your point.
And everybody would be reacting to that.
That 10 to 15 minute window before you can get, like, exactly what you're going to say to the press is where you will get the most true account of what took place, right? The most truth. Once you get to your PR people, like, then there's, you know, you get some agenda driven, like, thing that you're going to say to the media.
Right.
But in that locker room, in those 10 minutes, that's when you would get, like, the most direct representation of what just happened on that.
Totally agree. Jake Trotter.
But I still got to ask, why would you?
Well, so
who would give you the advice to go in there and use that?
So there was an incident that occurred. I don't know if I should give these details. I think the statute of limitations have passed.
Right.
I won't give out names. There was an incident occurred at Florida State with me and a Florida State teammate of mine.
Yeah.
And he and another guy were goofing around. And they recorded intimate relations of one player with another, with a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes in and she finds out about it. And I was living there. So I had this girl come to our room furious.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't have any idea. Thank goodness. Cause I wasn't there. I had no knowledge of it. She's screaming at me like, where is he? Where is he? I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
And then so she's very upset. She's like, I'm going to the police with this.
Yeah.
So we're like, uh-oh. So they call an attorney. An attorney comes up with a story like, hey, this should be your defense. You should say, hey, I'm a person who, you know, is a stature. I have, you know, fame of some sorts. you should say that you did it to protect yourself for liability reasons.
Right.
You know, like that's what you should say. So that was what they used, and now they play it down, and he got it. But, and there were still some consequences there that were sure. pretty serious. But I think lawyers...
You're saying that the race card was gonna to some degree...
Well, and that's, of course, Mason Rudolph's attorneys are going to accuse him of that, because they said... Mason Rudolph's attorney came out and had a statement and said, we won't comment on this further. This is a desperate Hail Mary attempt to get a suspension reduced.
I don't know. Like, I mean, look, maybe I'm not the brightest bulb in the pack, but like if I'm his representation of all, like I'm not going with that. I'm not going with like the race card with that one. Like, do you know what I mean? Like it's just,
think after the game, here was the one thing I thought, because everybody was most part, it was pretty unanimous. Myles Garrett, throw the book at him. Sure. He should never, you know, I thought he four games would have been fine. Like that was my personal opinion. If it was six, I thought the NFL had to show this could never happen again. But you did have people, assault charges should be filed. He should never play again. It should be all this serious stuff. And in my mind, I thought the one reason I would give him an excuse for that, and probably everybody would, whereas if you use that word, that to me, all bets are off the table.
You had gone there then, before he even said it.
Right. Yeah. In my mind, I was like, if he does that, like that's one where a lot of people may give him a pass on that. And it's like, if you, like, there's a couple things. If you spit in your face.
Yeah.
If you use the N word to a guy, or if you grab your junk, like there's certain things that kind of not excusable, but it kind of makes more sense where he might get a little bit more of a pass from the court of public opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know that I would have. Like, again, your representation should be a lot brighter than you and I. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you can sit here and tell us how bad it looks after a week and a half that you've never divulged this to anyone and said it, don't, like, his lawyers would have had to have been bright enough to, like, isn't a good look. It's not a good look. Like, you should have laid the framework and the groundwork for this, like, right after the game. You should have been singing to the high heavens, even if it didn't happen, that it happened, if we were going to use it a week and a half later, right?
Do you buy into the, because I've also seen speculated, well, the NFL came out and they said they didn't find any, they basically said it didn't give any credence, but they couldn't prove it wrong. They couldn't say we didn't. If you're the NFL, I think this is extremely serious, especially with where our country is and the way the NFL has been portrayed as the owners against, you know, I mean, they have been compared to slave mentality, right? Yeah. So there's obviously some racial, the Colin Kaepernick thing. There's also some racial tensions mm-hmm. that exist with the NFL. I think this is one where they need to come out either emphatically say he did or we have evidence that he didn't. You can't come out and just say, well, we haven't found it. I think you need to show we went to the tapes. We listened back. We couldn't hear anything. Because what did they do is what I want to know. If you're the NFL and you said, nope, Myles Garrett, we don't believe, like we don't take anything into that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Like, right.
You should at least say that and say, look, we went to all these audios. We have audios of everything. We played everything back and we couldn't find evidence of it. And you could still, Myles Garrett could still say, well, it was under a pile and nobody heard it,
right.
Which is still a possibility. But I think the NFL should have come out stronger and said either no or yes,
well,
like one way or another.
I did think, like, I was left this morning feeling like the NFL, whether it becomes a major problem or not, I mean, you got a lot of different races and creeds represented in your league, like, do you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and just the optics of this particular fight, right? Mason Rudolph started the fight.
Well, he
hasn't been fine. There's been no penalty levied against him. He started the fight. I'm not excusing what Myles Garrett did. Like that, you do what you got to do with that. Like I had no problem. I did think it was interesting that Pouncey got his suspension reduced by a mm-hmm. game, though. Like, you were kicking and punching
multiple
on the
haymakers.
Like, I thought those three games should have stood. What's the other dude's name? Ogunjobi?
Yeah.
You get suspended for a push in the back?
Right. And it was a cheap shot.
I mean, cheap shots happen all the time. Like, you didn't spear him in the head. You shoved him down to the ground.
I thought Mason Rudolph should have got a game. And I think it is an egregious miss by the NFL
that doesn't look good. Look, I don't play my race card all the time,
right?
But as like, if you want to break it down racially and you're talking about like the optics of that,
right,
that doesn't look good.
Agreed.
That the white guy started the fight,
right,
and all three of the black dudes got suspended and the white dude's standing there like,
I agree. I think it's an awful look for the NFL. Yeah. I think it's an awful look. And it'll be interesting because there is supposedly, I'm still waiting for this to be announced, he is supposed to be fined. They said multiple fines are going to be out.
That's okay. Like, look, something has to happen, right? Or the optics of that are just...
It better be significant. Right. If it's $5,000 or $10,000, I'd be
the pissed. Optics of that are bad.
Are really bad. Yeah. Jake Trotter, who covers the Cleveland Browns, he's one of their beat writers. He was the guy who actually asked Sheldon Richardson. He asked Baker Mayfield. Right. He asked a ton of players in the locker room. He said his takeaway from the Browns locker room, if what Miles alleges did happen, either he didn't tell teammates about it or his teammates are pretending they don't know anything about it, which doesn't make any sense. But he also added, nobody's saying Miles is lying either, because you had Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham. They all said
we know
he's
him to
the
be
type
a
of guy.
Dude.
Yeah, which yeah. I would add. I think he's been unfairly portrayed as a dirty player because he got in the fight in the Titans game and he hit somebody with an open fist. Like, that happens all the time. That to me is not dirty. It was a scuffle and he hit a guy.
Yeah.
He should have been flagged. Yeah. The hit where he hurt Trevor Siemian, that to me was – I think he did get flagged for a late hit, but it was bang, bang. I don't think it was dirty, and it was the worst luck ever that Trevor Siemian just happened to hurt his ankle.
Right.
Like, that was just bad luck. I don't think that was a dirty play. I thought that was a defensive lineman who's trying to get a quarterback and trying to deliver a blow.
Right.
I don't think it was that bad. So that to me, and I saw that Myles Garrett's dad put something out. Like, look, the unfortunate thing about this is with the race card now in the conversation, our country is already so – there's so much tension there. It just sucks. Like, well, I hate when this happens.
Look, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. And why my original question to you might have come off like I believed Myles Garrett. I didn't mean it to come off like that. I was simply saying, why would you say that if it didn't happen? It is such an inflammatory thing for a situation like this that you would have to imagine you just want to go away.
Right.
Why would you use that? If it didn't happen, not saying that it did, but whoever, if it didn't, whoever gave you, I thought that was the wrong play there, man.
I think it comes from, I don't think it was Myles Garrett. I think it was his people.
Yeah.
If that's the case, if that's what it came from and it's not true, I don't think he made up that. I think he was given bad advice. If that's the case, ultimately, I hate that it's going to be word against word.
Yeah.
Because then it's going to be, I'm the white guy and I don't believe him. You know, I hate that.
But like, again,
and it probably
for
it does
Myles Garrett,
yes.
Like if it was done, like it was when you have your worst moment as a pro or as a human being, right? You said like maybe this could just be his worst moment
which
as
it
a
probably
human being.
Is.
Do you want to draw more attention to that and keep the conversation revolving around your worst moment?
Right.
Do you?
Right.
No.
You just want to
get as far away from that as possible. So again, bro, like, if that didn't happen, and I don't know.
Right. No
one does. That was the wrong way to go about that. And that's what that's the only part of me that's like, bro, why would why would you do that if you didn't at least think that you heard that?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. It's something that's not going to go away now because everyone's going to be talking about it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Kennel and Bell as we move on to the NBA. The Pelicans have actually had a nice little run recently, stringing together a few wins. Brandon Ingram has continued to really have what is, you know, could be considered a breakout season.
Yeah.
He had 28. He's ninth in the NBA in scoring at 25. He had 15 points in the fourth quarter last night. He's shooting 51% of the field in this win over Phoenix. Your boy Dave Griffin's putting together a nice little season so far. And then when Zion gets out of this mix, you got to be pretty optimistic about what the future holds.
Yeah, I think you do. I thought coming in that they'd contend for the playoffs. And then they stumbled out of the gates a bit, but Zion, you know, the Zion injury factored into that. They have an interesting mix of, you know, young players that could go get it. They play with good pace. You know, I thought early in the season Alvin Gentry was playing too many people, so no one was able to really, really get in a rhythm, namely Lonzo. But Drew Holiday is a really, really, really good guard. And this is one of those situations where, You know, I've said on air before about playing with LeBron and or going to a really, really good team at a point in your career where it's not conducive to your growth as a player because you kind of get fit into this role. Like, this is one of these. He's better having left the Lakers and not playing with LeBron at this point. Like, learning from LeBron in that 1 year window, watching how he works, probably getting some tutelage as a player was probably great for him. But for the type of player he is, which is a scoring player, he couldn't be in LA anymore. There weren't shots there. There wasn't opportunity for him to spread his wings and do what he's doing now. So that's kind of a real life example of when people ask me, should said player who's a good young star go play with two other stars? And I'm like, probably not right now in this point in his career, because you want this opportunity. You want to be able to play on a pretty good team and spread your wings, and figure out, you know, if you can become a number one leading scorer on a championship level team. And you don't always get that opportunity when you play with the Kevin Durant's and the Kawhi's the best on the planet. You know?
Yeah, you're not going to get the opportunities there.
Right.
In that game as well, Devin Booker had a pretty impressive night. His season continues to look really impressive, but potentially putting together a 50-50-90 season.
Nope.
So it'd be 50% from the field, 50% from three, and over 90. Is it the three-pointers the one that you got to worry about, right? There's no way you're going to sustain that type of pace.
He's fantastic. Like, he is a great player, but you ain't shooting 50% from the three in the NBA. It's not happening. With the amount of shots that he shoots, like, if you're talking about a guy who comes off and shoots like one a game, two a game, maybe,
right?
Maybe, yeah, but he's volume. He's their guy. I can't imagine he's going to wind up shooting. I would say at the end of the day, I put the over under at like 44% from three.
Right.
When it's all said and done.
Right. Joey did say there's been a few that have been 50-40-90, 40%
around three.
That
in and of itself is
which he might do that.
Yes.
But I'm with you. The likelihood of maintaining that from a 3-point percentage is highly unlikely. And he's only at 48.6, as good as he's been. He's still under 50.
Right.
And he'd have to get that much better on the back end when there's more that much more games. I don't see it happen either. The Melo era, firmly underway in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
This was pretty interesting.
Hoodie Melo.
The end of the first half, we're always wondering about what his role is. Now, Dame is out, but CJ McCollum's on the court with him. But watch what happens at the end of the first quarter. He's looking, hey, yeah, I'll take it. Look at him. Yeah, you just stay over there. I'll take it. Got a Lysol ball at the top.
That's interesting. He came. Oh, he wanted a bigger defender on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, get that out.
And then, Joey told me about this, and I was like, well, did he finish?
No.
If he finishes, it's one thing if you call somebody off.
What he's doing is he's trying to get George Hill, who's a really good smaller defender. He doesn't want him in the high pick and roll because they'll probably switch that, and then he's got a more agile defender in front of him who he can't beat off the bounce. So I think they ran Brook Lopez into the screen.
Right.
You figure if you get Brook on a switch or you get him on a hard show, at least you can get around that, which he did.
Right.
But then there's no finish on it. I'll just say this again. Like, Melo had a much better game last night. Like, efficiency was better. I don't know what the plus minus was. I didn't look into that. But he was more efficient, shot the ball better from three. If Melo is going to be called on to do what he's doing in Portland for your team, then you're not a contending team.
Right.
And that, I don't mean that as a slight to Melo. I mean that like...
Of an indictment of Portland.
Of Portland, yeah. Yeah. At 35, having been out of the game for 2 years, if he's coming in and the ball needs to be in his hands to play make for you as much as it has been for them, then you're not who you think.
When he signed, the reaction from a lot of people was like, yay, he's back in the NBA. D. Wade, I know he's not playing anymore, but he was like, yay, it's the Banana Boat Crew, right?
Yep.
LeBron James was like, it's about time.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any part of you that was like, well, if you wanted him to come back, you
could have
been playing with the Lakers, right?
Yeah. Could have been right there.
Because that was my first inclination. Like, if LeBron didn't, like, that should be really telling.
Yeah,
and they could have used him if he still had something left.
Especially this year, when you had to give up, like, everything you had on the bench to get AD. Yeah, you would imagine they were looking for minimum guys, right, to kind of fill out the back end of that roster. Yeah, Melo would have been a really good fit there in theory if there was still something left in the tank. So
he still hasn't played with Dame either, by the way. And that, you know, that's not happening. If that happens with Dame, there's probably going to be issues.
Well, yeah, there would be. Yeah, even at the end of a quarter, that would still cause some concern. Dame might be upset about that.
Yeah, look, because in that scenario, it's not like, hey, I got a mismatch and you got the Greek freak on you, bro.
Right.
So like if Melo came down in a cross match and he had Brook Lopez on the top with him. And then, you know, George Hill was over there guarding Dame Lillard. And you just real quickly was like, yo, let me take him. I got him.
Right.
That's fine by me. Right. But if you're going to say, hey, there's 17 seconds left on the, in the quarter and it's me or it's Dame Lillard and I got the Greek Freak on me and Dame Lillard, had, you better get that ball up.
Right.
Yeah. Or you were.
Yeah, we're not problems. Yeah. I'm a little talking to after one. We talked a little bit about Luka yesterday when you were out. Question for you.
Wait. Who did the show with you yesterday?
Joe, my man Joey did.
Joey did. Yeah,
he actually did a pretty good job. He actually covered my butt on some of the NBA stuff because I am not quite as adept at covering that. I love the NBA. I love watching it. But when you get into some of these conversations, and I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I'm curious to see how you, I don't care about the top five players. I mean, to be honest with you, like when they get in those debates, like if you really feel like, hey, Harden is better than Kawhi.
Good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good for you. I can make a case for Kawhi if you want to.
Right.
But that being said, is Luka a top five player in the NBA right now with no Kevin Durant, no Steph Curry? So he's not. Where would you have top seven? Like he's in there?
Yeah, he's really close.
Because that's what Van Gundy said during the game. He was calling it and they were having this back and forth, this exact conversation. And they were like, well, how? Because the question was, though, is he the best player in the now? And Van Gundy was like, no, you can't go there. He said, but I could say top seven.
Top seven, yeah.
Because so that's about where you would put him to.
Yeah, because right when we came, like it was Giannis, Harden, Braun, Kawhi, AD. And then I was searching, right? And then I'm like, probably fits right in around there. Maybe if you really like Paul George when he's healthy, Paul George can be in that mix. There are probably some other guys I'm forgetting, but
Kyrie being, that's one thing I asked for Joey the other day. It feels like Kyrie's stock has really taken a dive.
It's fallen a little bit, but I love Kyrie. So like Kyrie's in that conversation too, but none of them just stand out above Luka. So I feel really good about six or seven for Luka. Definitely top seven. What he's doing you know, it's pretty remarkable. And I was showing my son rarely watches NBA with me. Just because they got these damn phones.
Right, so they're always distracted.
But we happened to come back from football the other night, and we were eating dinner, and Luka was playing, and you know, I was just showing him he had like 32 in the first half, or something like that. And I was showing him
22 in the first quarter.
Yeah, I was like, bro, how big do you think he is? And he was like, oh, like 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". I was like, man, he's like 6'8", 6'9". Like, he's a big dude, deal. Like, and it's just pretty cool to see him out there with he's got everything in
your bag.
Is there a
comp for him? Is there anybody, like, do you see him as a player, either present or past, that you could say, hey, he's similar to this?
It would take me a while off the top. His game is a new school game. Like, the stuff that he does isn't old school. He is right in line with all of these like innovative offensive players using all of these like different like weapons that these guys are teaching now and exploring offensively. I don't know, man. He's tough. He's
unique.
He is really unique.
It's pretty crazy that Dallas could have two of the greatest Euros in the history of the game. If the career continues to develop this, going from Dirk to Luka, that'd be pretty impressive. I told Joey this yesterday. Go ahead.
Raj, we talked about this before the show, so I wanted to bring it back up. So if we're talking about Luka in that range, that top five, six, seven range, that means he's one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah.
And we always talk about how if you have that guy, you have a chance. Does that mean they can compete in the West?
Nope.
How far away are they?
Nope. They are – no, that's easy.
Now, is this more on Luka or the surrounding cast?
No, I think it's not on – look, Luka's fantastic. I think Luka's still a year away from being able to carry you to the promised land as a number one player. Clearly he's got the goods. Like, that's not even a question. But I think even in his like maturation as a player, he's a year away from being able to carry you to the finish line. But I think his supporting cast needs to be better. Like, I don't know that they've got the chops around him. There are some nice pieces, but I don't think that team's ready to make a championship run, Joey. I do think they could be competitive. Like, they're going to be in games with a lot of teams. Like, they're not going to be an easy pushover. I just don't think that they can win it this year. So I would say that they're a year away, both Luka and just for some maturity and a little bit more experience, even though he's got a wealth of experience in the EuroBasket and FIBA. But I think his roster is a year away from helping him do that.
For sure. Speaking of, you know, top five players, best player in the league, at the end of last season when Kawhi Leonard won the finals MVP, it was like, okay, KD gets hurt. It's like, all right, he's taken over that role as best player in the world.
Yep.
That's been had. I think it's taken a little hit this year because of the load management. But for me, it's not even about the load management. It's more about, okay, maybe he's actually hurt. And if you're starting to see all of these injuries build up over the course of his career, which is a combination of why he's managing the load, I think it becomes like you've got to be available to play to help your team. And I think that does put a dent in his argument for best player in the league. Because you can't say best player in the league when he's healthy. You got to be healthy to be considered in that conversation. You know, like imagine if we said, well, you know, Russell Wilson, but imagine Russell Wilson misses 12 games a year.
Right.
Or, you know, he misses 4 games a year.
Right.
He takes off, you know, 20-30% of the season. Then no one would consider him as that. And I think that has to be in the consideration with Kawhi. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. We live in a society. It's always, you know, we talked about it the other day. What have you done for me lately? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind, so to speak. And while other guys are having phenomenal seasons, you're only like losing more ground in that conversation, right? Like when James Harden is out there doing what he's doing offensively and you're not getting a chance to see Kawhi because he's not on the floor, then that's your gap shrinking, right? Like AD gap shrinking, LeBron back to gap shrinking. And so, I always thought it was a really, really close conversation anyway. I thought Kawhi had, when he showed me what he showed me in the finals and then coming out in game one of this year, after that game, I said, okay, I think he might be the best player on the planet right now. And I didn't mean any shade at LeBron, but he's in year 17 and he can just do some things physically that LeBron can't. But guess what? LeBron in year 17 is playing every game, big minutes. And Kawhi hasn't been on the court in I don't know how many, you know, games this season. So I do think that's a real thing. And I think it's fair to question whether you could be the best player on the planet if you're not going to be out there delivering for your team night in and night out. I don't think he cares ultimately, though. You know, I think his quest is for a championship, so I don't know he's caught up in that. I do want to touch...
Because if he wins the title with the Clippers, everybody's saying, there he is, best player in the world. Nobody will remember that he sat out these games in November.
Correct. Yeah. Joe, to your question, like 2 questions ago about if you're a top 7 player, does that give you a chance? AD's been a top 7 player for how long? His teams ain't never had a chance.
Yeah, that's
like,
fair.
You know what I mean?
That's
so
fair.
Like, no, I don't mean it like, but I'm saying you have to have, there are other things that go into that. You have to have, you know, a top 10 player that's ready to carry that load, ready to get you over. He's in the prime of his career. He's got enough experience, and then you got to have a roster to support that, or you know, you're not ready to do it.
Yeah, I had a question about Kawhi. Is there a chance, and I was thinking about this more after we talked about it this morning before the show, is he just, I mean, I'll reserve it till we see the playoffs, right? Because they're going to be in the playoffs either way. If he plays 60 games, goes to the playoffs and plays the most minutes ever again and they win again, is he just smarter than everyone?
I mean, Joe, you and I say this all the time. I know it because I did it for 12, 13 years. Like you, it's too many games. It's too many games. So,
but again, if he wins it all, no one's going to say it was too many games.
No, I mean, just the 82 that you play. Playoffs, it's over 100 games in some cases that you're playing, like, you know, with preseason factored into it. That's a lot of basketball. And so, you know, if, you know, what I imagine he's doing, either A, he's significantly hurt and he's playing through it and they're just kind of managing the situation, or B, what he's doing is what we didn't really ever do, which was say, man, I feel a slight like pull, or I feel, you know, my knee feels really tight. There's some fluid in it. And what we do is you'd ice that thing up, you'd warm
play
it up, you put it in, and you get out there and you do it. He's probably just shutting it down, you know, on nights like that and figuring out, you know, exactly how much his body needs to rest to be at full strength again. Yeah, I guess if you want to say he's smarter than everyone, yeah, I think we could all be a little smarter, and that the season doesn't need to be 100 games, give or take 5 or 6 games.
I did see Andrew Marchand from the New York Post had an article out that said the NBA had at least considered shortening the season a little bit, but there was some concessions in there too. It involved sort of a midseason tournament maybe with some of the bottom teams. Like, there's no way they're just going to give 82 and go to 60 and say, we're good, we'll get the same money. But I do think there, if you, and this is where I think the NBA deserves some credit. Adam Silver historically has been willing to think outside the box. And the way the ratings are declining, I think, and the way players are sitting out, maybe there are some alternative options that are still get your full money's worth from the TV companies.
Sure.
And then you can take some load off.
And not for nothing, I think if you want full transparency, like, you should, if you're the league, come up with some agreement with teams where they can take, each star can get a certain amount of, like, games off, right? Like, if they're 82, I don't know what that number is. It's a slippery slope.
The thing that I suggested too early, and I think you like this idea, was once you achieve a certain status in the league, once you've played
Yeah.
You know, maybe the first, if you're 0 to 5 years in the league, you get three games off. If you're 5 to 8 years, you get 7 games off. If you've played 10 or 8
yeah,
or more
like
years,
that.
You get 10 games off.
I like
off.
That. The same you know, way if you're LeBron, minimum like, salary goes
yeah,
up, like
exactly.
your amount of nights off.
Have
I like
sliding
that.
Scale.
And full transparency. So when I get the schedule, barring injury, because if real injury happens, then you're going to have to sit more nights. But what you do is you let everyone know when you're sitting there.
Right.
So that the people have enough time to like not buy the ticket if they don't want to come see you know, the
yeah.
Houston Rockets.
A lot of people,
without,
I'm sure, want to watch Kawhi play.
Right. And that way, like, you know, you keep your 82, but like, you're not pooping all over the fans and people that want to come out. And then you can, you know, the networks can make their schedule around, you know, that. Like,
right.
figure out when you, hey, we're not putting the Houston Rockets on. They're going to be without James Harden on the 11th.
Right.
So don't put them on national TV. Put,
right.
you know, like, it helps everybody. You just need more transparency with that.
Definitely. And it'll be something that a lot of people are going to be talking about over the course of the NBA season. Welcome back to Canal and Bell. The NFL, Eric Weddle, safety for the Rams, big offseason signing for them, was done with his time with Baltimore.
Is that ice cream truck dude?
Yes, yeah. That was. Fan favorite
yeah.
in Baltimore. And
mm-hmm.
he would pay for the entire ice cream truck to have the big party, and everybody would celebrate that one. So he obviously had a really good time in Baltimore, right? Felt like he owed his career to them.
Sure.
They embraced him as one of a family, which is all great. That's a
yep.
great story. So he moves to the Rams. They're playing against each other this week. And he was asked by the media, are you going to help the Rams out, your current team? You're going to help them at all with any information, any trade secrets, so to speak. And Eric Weddle said, I could tell them a lot of stuff, but that's not who I am. So we're going to play it on the field, and the best team is going to win. I think everything is on tape. It's not anything they can't figure out just by watching tape. He had some other comments where he said, what kind of man would I be if I sold out my old teammates?
What?
You know what kind of man you would be? Somebody who helps your current team
correct,
win.
Correct.
No, I mean, that's what type of man you would be. Like
yeah.
this to me is a little bit. And I think Eric Weddle's a good guy. He's actually interacted with me a little bit on Twitter somewhat. I think he's a good dude. I think he's well-respected across the league. But I think he's a little self-righteous, like an opportunity to say, look at what a man of character I am. When I don't think anybody, if he would have said, man, I was in with McVay's office for 12 hours and we were just information a dump.
Yep.
Nobody would have looked at him differently. I don't even think the Ravens would have said, oh, man, like, oh, I can't believe he did that. No, it's accepted practice.
Look, you are in a competitive league. Every win counts. You are no longer a member of Baltimore. I would imagine if you loved Baltimore so much and you thought you were like a member of the family, they're given the opportunity to re-sign for as much as the Rams paid you, you would have stayed in Baltimore, right? So that didn't happen. That means they didn't think that highly of you, right?
Right.
For whatever reason. Now, all bets are off. I am petty. Like, so give me the opportunity to go back and play like Phoenix or one
yeah.
of those teams. I'm telling you everything.
Right.
All right. But I'm not suggesting that you need to be petty. I'm simply saying if you got stuff that can help a team win a game, that's your job when you're currently on another team. Like, you have to give your current team the best chance to win the game. And if that includes inside information that you're privy to, it happens all the time. Dude, the best – when we're an NBA shoot-arounds, dude, and we got Danny Cannell. He just came over from the Knicks.
Yeah.
Danny Cannell is running a damn shoot-around.
Right.
Hey, let me tell you what they're going to run on you know, X, Y, and Z. Hey, here's what they like to do on whatever.
Right. Weddle said, I think everything is on tape. It's not anything they can't figure out just by watching tape. I would disagree with that. Now, I do think it's overstated. Like, oh man, he could really help them, you know, win the game. But the NFL is a game where games are decided by one or two big plays. A
right.
lot of times it's big plays. And if he could come over, because he's right, everything is on film. You can watch every play that the Ravens have run this season. But it is cut a certain way where it's not the TV copy, so you don't have audio. You can't hear checks at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
It's cut right before the play kind of starts, and then right after it ends, and then it goes to a high end zone. You don't see a lot of interchanges that happened before. But for me as a quarterback, what I would want to know, signals and communication.
Yep.
So Weddle played in the secondary. So, and this is where I'm kind of like, if you're Jared Goff, you're like, really? You're not going to help me out with anything?
Right.
Because some teams are very basic. Like if you see a empty formation where there's no running back in the backfield, teams might have automatic checks that they use probably 70% of the time or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe let's say that everybody in the secondary is going like this, like a 20, you know, some type, or tapping their head.
Yeah.
And you go cover two, and this is your check for cover two. If I'm Jared Goff, I would love to know that.
Right.
You know, like, why wouldn't you tell me that information?
Right.
Or if you're all yelling, hey, you know, one of the checks in Denver when I was actually on the team, but we figured out our own defense because we play against each other all the time in the offseason. They would yell, Hooters, Hooters, Hooters. That was the two. That was cover two.
Right.
So we all kind of knew it sometimes. So we would start, Jake Plummer and I would start talking, hey, if you hear Hooters, you know, it's cover two. So this route should have a chance.
Right.
And even then, it doesn't mean it's going to work for sure, but it just kind of gives you an inclination. So I would disagree with Eric Weddle when he says everything's on the tape. They can just figure it out from watching the tape. You can find, and maybe it's only one or two things that come into play at the most important crunch time. Because I guarantee you, Jared Goff has audibles. If he sees an all-out blitz or a zero blitz, he's going to check into it. And he's going to try to dial up that home run. And if he knows, because defenses are going to try to disguise. They might try to look like it's going to be an all-out blitz, but then they drop out at the last minute.
Yep.
But if they're showing blitz, and then you can also hear them, and it kind of confirms that.
Yep.
Because of the communication you can hear, then you're going to dial up, and you're probably going to hit a home run.
I'm with you, bro. You grow up.
That's what I just think it's like, I think it's a self-righteous moment for him to say, look at me. But I also think, what does it say about your current team? Like, what kind of teammate are you now?
Oh, you're riding with us.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Vontaze Burfict has been in the news a couple times recently since he was suspended for the rest of the year because it was really a dirty shot that he had against the Indianapolis Colts. And it was a laundry list of fines and dirty cheap shots. Last week, he said he went to the NFL office to meet with Roger Goodell, and he was asked about that meeting, and he said, Roger Goodell is a bleep. Starts with a B, rhymes with itch. And it was kind of, but this is what you're going to get with Vontaze Burfict. I think he's a little off his rocker. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of those teammates where, and I had a couple guys throughout my career I played with, liked playing with them, but man, I was like, I don't even want to cross them. Like, you don't want to mess with them.
Right.
Because if you get them on the wrong side, they could, even if you're teammates, you don't know what you're going to get.
Sure.
I think that would be Vontaze Burfict. He came out with another accusation saying, quote, I honestly think some of the games are rigged. The refs pick and choose when they want to throw their flags. There are flags on every play. The refs determine the outcome of games. So I choose not to watch it for the most part.
What do you want me to say?
Do you believe him?
No, I don't believe him.
I don't either.
I don't believe
I think him. He has
I'll tell
sabotaged
you.
The rest of his career.
Yeah,
he got no chance of playing again. Like, and he probably realized that when he went to Roger Goodell and tried to meet with him.
Yeah,
and that's why he's calling him a bleep and all this stuff.
There were times in NBA games that I felt like there had to be something else going on.
Right.
You're like, this is impossible. There's no way that
you. And it wasn't just bad calls, it was calls a certain way.
Yeah.
Correct.
But come to find out, the dude reffing the game was betting on the games. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't know that it's an agenda. My situation wasn't necessarily an agenda by the NBA. But, like, I was telling Joey, like, I felt like you could be in those games. We were in Denver, and Tim Donaghy was reffing the game. And, like, things that just never happened, calls that just never called, keep getting called, they keep pushing us into extra overtimes. You're like, you don't know what's going on, but you're like, something, this isn't right. This I played in too many NBA games to not know what's going on, and this doesn't normally happen. I remember being in San Antonio. Like, if you were, when the Tim Donaghy story leaked, there was on the front page of the USA Today, it was just Tim Donaghy making some call. In the bigger story on the inside when you opened it was Tim Donaghy on a whistle in San Antonio and me behind him like, what? Like, what's going on? I remember the play. Like, I remember Manu Ginobili going down the lane. I think it was a playoff game. And you know, me kind of letting him go by because I had some protection at the rim and him calling like a foul. And I was like, you can't even miss that. Like, even if you tried to miss that. So there were times where, like, as a player, you may feel like, dude, something's not right here.
Did you ever feel that with any other official, or did you start to notice a trend with? Because
I never noticed a trend with Tim Donaghy. Like, I rarely took account of who was reffing the game, like, or thought about it that deeply. I just, when I see a guy, I'd be like, oh, he's an a-hole. Like, and keep it moving. You know what I mean? But it never, two and two never really made four to me. But I had been in games, you know, and as a competitor, sometimes you feel like you're getting the short end of the stick anyway.
All the time, yeah. But show me a coach who comes out after and is like, great game, officials.
Right. But there are a few that take it over the top where you're like, eh. And I remember being in those where you're like, and a lot of them correlated with Tim Donaghy having those games.
Yeah. What a mess it would be if any major sport had another one like that. It's pretty, like, the NBA has done a pretty good job of distancing themselves from that.
Bro, you know Tim Donaghy wrote a book, right?
Yeah.
You know he wrote a book.
Yeah.
And the NBA went out of, they put the kibosh on that book. You don't think people wanted to read that book? Right. Like, seriously.
Oh, yeah. It would have been a bestseller. Number one, bestseller, right?
Killed that damn book. You can only find excerpts from it online sometimes now.
Right.
Killed that book.
Yeah.
There's a movie coming out about it.
Is there?
I'm pretty sure there's a movie coming out about it.
Ooh, that'd be pretty good. I'm watching.
Yeah,
I'm watching it too. And I'm going to look for Raza as one of the second, one of the extras in the movie. They definitely got to show some footage. Welcome back to Canelo and Bell. So during the break, Raza and I just watched the trailer for Inside Game. It's going to be the story of Pat Tony. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by it. And the dude that was on, I think he was on Party of Five. Is that the actor that plays one of the dudes?
Is he?
Like Matthew Fox or something like that?
Party of Five. Oh, I remember Party of Five. Yeah, no doubt. No, that's always fascinating to me just because, again, it's one of those things your spidey senses are tingling.
Yeah.
You never really knew what was going on. But you're like, something's not right, you know?
Floyd Mayweather took to social media, posted a picture of himself, in garb, not street clothes, in his boxing gear. And it said he was coming out of retirement in 2020 and that him and Dana White are working on something. There's some speculation. What exactly does this mean when he's coming out of retirement? Do you think it means he's fighting again, or is this just an ultimate tease to get you excited about something that maybe he's involved in with Dana White, maybe as a promoter or something else? Or
no, he's fighting.
He's 42.
I think he's fighting. I don't know that he's going to fight anymore in a real boxing commission bout where his record as a boxer could be in jeopardy. But I do think you might see him do some things where he can score really big paydays in some kind of, let's be real. The Connor thing, everybody came in here and said Connor fought him well. Come on, bro. That guy carried Connor around a ring for four rounds or whatever it was until he decided
called his own shot.
Yeah, come on, man. If you see some stuff like that where he can get big paydays and just be out there putting on exhibitions.
Yeah, he put
Masvidal called out Canelo.
What?
Masvidal called out Canelo. Maybe that's
the crossover.
Maybe he heard Masvidal call out Canelo and he's coming back for that payday.
I know what Floyd better not do.
Is take get his MMA, ass back. Go to UFC.
He better not get his ass back in that ring with Canelo.
Exactly.
I know that.
You don't want none of that. That would be pretty interesting to see that unfold if that did happen. Nico Mannion, Red Mamba.
Yes, sir.
Is he the guy? Because every year I feel like, it was Trae Young, it was Zion. Is Nico Mannion the guy that people are going to have to tune in and watch?
I don't know.
Don't know?
I don't know. I mean, he's a good player. He plays at Arizona. He's exciting. He's plays an exciting brand of basketball, man. Pretty cool. I watched him at the McDonald's game, and he didn't get a lot of looks, I don't think, at the McDonald's game. And then he played he's exciting. He's exciting to watch. I don't know that there's a guy this year, though, that you got to tune in to watch.
He's going
to
separate from the field like that.
He could be one of a few.
Yeah, he's playing in the Pac-12. It's too late for
you
me.
You see my boy? I hear that. Vernon Carey's son went off last night.
We did.
They played Cal, and he totaled – he matched Cal's total output offensively in the first half. So if Cal had, 28 in the first half, he had 28 on his own.
21.
Wound up 21, sorry. So what was it? He had finished with 31 and 10 or something like that. He's a really good player. The James Wiseman kid's a really good player. There's some guys out there, but I don't know if any of them pop nobody pops like Zion.
Did you donate to the James Wiseman GoFundMe page that was set up by Jay Williams pay his $11,500? So I think it's Jay Williams is brilliant for putting himself in the conversation and getting a lot of conversation about it. But here's the thing. If he got in trouble for taking a gift of $11,500, what's the difference if he takes this gift for $11,500? Right. But I do think
not a booster, maybe.
Right. Well, yes.
Not from a single booster.
Yes,
I don't know.
That is true. But the NCAA mishandled this so bad because it appears, and it not appears, it kind of is what you're doing, because there's nobody to pay back because it was a gift. They're basically fining him $11,500 that he has to donate somewhere, which is the same thing that you do in NFL with your fines. You can donate them to your favorite charity or whatever. So sometimes it's not that bad of a deal.
Just let a Memphis booster I don't know, conveniently lose a bag of cash, on a sidewalk somewhere. James Wiseman he happens to be passing by. I mean, it's all within the realm of possibilities, right?
Right.
He finds a bag with $11,000 in it.
Right.
Can't be traced to anyone.
Yeah.
We're good
and
to go.
Go pay it.
Here we go.
Because the NCAA is so hard to defend sometimes. This is one of them. I do think they have a tough job of having enforced rules that are antiquated and old, and that's all they're trying to do. But just suspend him the 11 games and say he can come back, because that's a pretty harsh penalty. Look, and then just say come back.
You start digging around any of them major.
Oh, man. The amount of. Like,
come on, man.
And which is why I have come around to the. Because I think there's a lot of these 10,000. Like, they could make this off the court if they were signing autographs, doing endorsements for car dealerships. They could make this money, and we wouldn't even be in these positions to go. All right. That's a wrap for us. Enjoy the weekend. Thanksgiving next week. Man, I can't believe it's here already. We'll see you Monday.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.